Corner, and welcome back to the C-Word Radio. I'm your host, Helen King, and this is the podcast for cancery people who want real conversations about cancer. If you like what you hear today, subscribe on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. Hello, my friends. It is so good to be back and not full of germs with a cold. I don't know about you, but I was a terrible patient before cancer, and now I'm kind of the worst. I hate not being able to do things and being stuck in bed. I think it reminds me too much of having cancer, to be honest. So I am very glad not to be stuck in bed or stuck on the couch. I also was quite annoyed because last week marked a whole year of the C Word being on air, and I really wanted to celebrate. So thank you for tuning in every week, for the messages of support, and basically for helping me create the C Word. I love that I've been able to create something positive from what was, let's face it, a rather shit situation. I met my guest today on Facebook. We sat down over Zoom to talk about our stories. Randy Brown lives in Virginia in the US, and whoa, did we talk? We chatted for about an hour and a half. Randy was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2016 when she was in her 30s. Our stories are so similar, it was spooky. Randy went to the doctor with some redness on her right breast and was diagnosed with mastitis. When the antibiotics didn't work, she ended up having a scan and a biopsy. Once she was diagnosed with breast cancer, treatment happened really fast. She ended up having chemo, a bilateral mastectomy, and radiation. In 2019, Randy started having pain in her shoulder, and she found out that the cancer had spread to her bones. This is Randy's story.
When I think about the timeline from that day, from December 19th, which was the day that I got the yes, it's cancer, to the day that I started chemo was exactly 1 month.
Wow, yeah.
And so it went from, you'll take a pill for 5 years, maybe do a little radiation, have a lumpectomy, that's all we're going to do. This is your five-year plan to... Oh, no, you're going to get a porch.
Yeah.
Let's talk about surgical options. And this is actually my second porch. So, like, I have a new porch.
Yeah.
This is my second phone.
Oh, we hit them in the same place. That's where they put mine, too.
Yeah. This is actually my second one. But, yeah, so it was exactly a month when I think back on it. I have it written down somewhere because I used it in a blog post one time. I had genetic testing and two MRIs and a body scan and all of the testing that you could possibly imagine and a port placement and met two plastic surgeons, met my radiation oncologist, met the whole thing. All of this happened in 2 weeks. And I came back and it went from, oh, we're going to do just these pills to, we're going to move this up to 11 and you're going to do intravenous chemo. And, oh, by the way, you're BRCA2 positive. So,
wow.
Yeah. So, it went from level 2 to level 11.
Real quick.
Really fast. Wow. Yeah.
And it's so hard, isn't it? Because I'm kind of in anniversary time because it's this time of year that it all happened for me in 2018. And it was very similar that it happened so bloody fast that I don't think I actually really went, wow, I've got cancer. There were two moments. There was the pre-surgery when I was sitting there by myself in my gown and with my precious stockings on going, what? You know, how did I get to this moment? And then the other time was, because it was very similar for me, I had my port put in on a Monday and on the Tuesday I started chemo. And I can remember sitting and a bit like out of it still from
the sedation from the port, I'd shaved my head in preparation, just going, what? This wasn't the plan. This wasn't how I wanted to spend my mid to late 30s.
That's where I was at. I went to my cousin at the time. Not to say my cousin. My cousin cut my hair pretty frequently. And it was, I don't know, just above my shoulders. And I was, hey, let's trim this up. And she's, oh, but it's gotten so long and it looks so good. Yeah, that's cute that you think so, but it's about to fall out of my head. Yeah. And she's, you don't know that's going to happen. I'm literally about to start chemo. Yeah. Let's not play the dumb girl now.
Yeah. I noticed that you had your mastectomy. You've had bilateral mastectomy and you had it after chemo finished. Did the tumors shrink? Did they respond to the first chemo treatment that you had?
They did. Tumors responded really, really well. One of the reasons we went to intravenous chemo was because they found, through all of those initial testing, they found two lymph nodes with cancer in them. And so the tumors, and those were kind of the things that they were really tracking as far as size, because the 11 o'clock spot, I was told I basically would have, by the time I felt that, I would have been at stage 4. And because of what was going on with my lymph nodes, I would have been too far gone already. The hypothesis is that the lymph node was full of cancer, that it backed up into the duct, causing what looked a mastitis. And had that not happened, I would not have found the cancer as early as
I did. So, it's really odd to me, because I'll tell you what happened to me. And so I found my lump in my right breast as well. And I think it might have been at about 11 o'clock or maybe 1 o'clock on the current. And I don't have children. I went to an emergency GP after work because I just started a new job. And I was diagnosed with non-lactating mastitis and given antibiotics to take and told that, oh, that lump, it might be an abscess. It might not be. You could go get an ultrasound if you want. So there was no urgency about it. So that blows my mind that you have had such a similar experience. And mine had made its way to the lymph nodes as well. It was rapid. It was, he basically said to me, this is a very aggressive, fast-growing cancer. And I think that is one of the hard things to get your head around, is that there had been this thing in there growing at pace. And sometimes I'll look at photos of myself a little bit before thinking, I had cancer in that photo and I had no idea. It happened so quickly. How long was it before you got the news that it had returned and metastasized?
I had my mastectomy July of 2017, and technically that was my all clear date, and that was my anniversary date. And January of 2019, I started to have pain in my shoulder, and I went to my primary care, and I was just, hey, I know that I just had the flu, but this is hurting, and it's just kind of weird. I probably pulled something. Honestly, what I thought is I never even went to a return of cancer. That was never my initial, this is why I'm having pain. My initial thought was, this hurts. And for me to say it hurts, it really freaking hurts. I have ridiculous pain tolerance. And so if I'm telling you it hurts, fix it, because it's off the charts. And so she sent me for an x-ray. And she said, I'm just going to send you, again, just precautionary because of your history. Well, the x-ray didn't show anything, so I wasn't worried. We were running under the assumption that it was a pinched nerve. So that was January 2019. I went back in April of 2019, and then again in July of 2019. And was, this is ridiculous. I keep taking your steroids. I keep going to your physical therapy. I'm jumping through your hoops, and nothing is working. And my first two appointments, I saw nurse practitioners and they consult with the doc. I didn't feel I was getting shortchanged or anything like that. But my third appointment was with the doc. I'm not coming unless I'm seeing her face. And she was just, so I'm not going to give you pills today. I'm going to give you an injection of steroids directly into your shoulder. And then I'm scheduling you for an MRI because this is 7 months. This is, you should be pain free at this point. Hi, I agree. I want to say less than a week later for my appointment to get the MRI. And I show up like 10, you're supposed to be, I don't know, 20 minutes early or whatever. And I was only 5 minutes early. And dudes, I'm not going to be able to get you in today. And I'm okay. You really want to change your mind, but I'm going to pretend like I don't care. I don't know what my face said to him because I legitimately said verbally, okay, I'll reschedule. That's fine. I respect your policy. He looked down at his watch and looks around the waiting room. And then he goes, what? Come on. We're gonna make this happen today. Okay. At that point, I'm not going to fight you. Like, you have a policy. I'm going to respect it. It's fine. So he takes me back for the MRI. We get all settled, do it, whatever. And he says, I thank him for his time. I said, I really appreciate you getting me in. I understand that I was late and I appreciate it. He says, well, it'll be about 24 to 48 hours. They'll review it, send it to the doc, blah, blah. Thank you very much. Like, I appreciate that. I stopped and got coffee and went to my office, and it had not been a full hour. And I look, my phone starts ringing and it says Cancer Center. First of all, Cancer Center didn't send me for the MRI. So I was like, this is not good. So I answer the phone, and not only was it not the doctor that sent me to the MRI, but technically the Cancer Center had been open for 3 minutes. So for the doc to be calling me, she said, so they couldn't get a hold to Dr. Levin, my primary care. And she said, so they called me because I'm the next one listed. Okay, that's fine. She said, I need you to stop using your arm. I'm sorry, what? She said, there is a large tumor of bone eating. There's a large bone eating tumor in your humerus bone. And I said, okay. She said, I want you to come in tomorrow, have a bone scan, and then see me immediately afterwards. I'm going to put you back on the phone with the girls to schedule. She goes, I literally don't want you to use your arm. Don't even pick up a water bottle. Your arm is highly susceptible to a break. And I'm literally going, I've been using my arm all year. It's been 7 months. And now I can't even pick up a water bottle. This is just stupid. So basically the humerus bone is 6 inches. The tumor was half, essentially. It was huge. So it was almost right at 2 years that I thought, I mean, technically I was metastatic for a year and didn't know it. I went for the bone scan, and then there is one orthopedic oncologist in my area. Apparently people don't specialize in that. I think it took me 2 weeks to get in to see him. I had to wait for a bone biopsy because he wasn't as easily swayed to say that the cancer was in fact metastatic. He wanted to make sure that it wasn't a new cancer. No, is it the same thing? And he said, we'll have to wait for the biopsy. And I tried one more time. And upon our first meeting, I wasn't sure we were going to be friends. I was might need to move. This guy is not going to be my. But then when I went back after we got the biopsy results, and I went back, we became friends. He was literally going to read the surgery release for me. Please don't. He said, excuse me. I said, don't read that to me. I said, I will sign it. You can give me blood if I need it. And you can cut off or out whatever you need to and fix it. That's why we're here. And he was, "You're not going to read this?" I go, "They're all the same. Can you have, can I have blood if I need it? And do I agree to you cutting me open?" Yes. Yes and yes.
I had my yearly mammogram yesterday and I lost the plot. Because we do spend so much of your time worrying about every ache and pain and all of those things. And I was thinking about it this morning, is that the fact is that none of us have control over our bodies. You can do all the treatment and live a good life, but we actually don't have control over whether or not our cancer comes back. And that is really frightening. And I think that's one of the things that's really hard for people to get their heads around, is that you're sort of living in this space where you want to just get on with life, but you've constantly got this cancer hanging over your head. So yours has come back, and I know you're a mum to a beautiful young girl. How have you coped with that relationship or coped with parenting through having cancer?
Coping with parenting, it's a little rough right now because she is 11. So she has definitely hit that I'm grown and I can do whatever I want. And she is me. I have a girlfriend who has a daughter who is her mini me in every way, and she's tried to deny it her daughter's entire life. Oh, that's not my child, whatever. I own it. My daughter is my daughter. She is up one side and down the other. She's me. I was telling someone the other day, I go, parenting's hard because you get in trouble. You're the one that gets punished. And this isn't fair. I don't appreciate this. But I think she's been on this ride as long as I have. She was 6 when I was initially diagnosed. And so we're 5 years into this. She's just turned 11. We've been doing this for 5 years and she gets it. But I think at this point, because I'm doing well, I'm stable and I'm in a good place with my health, other than side effects that are just unfortunately the name of the game, we try not to worry. And we don't make a big deal about it, but I do spend a lot of time trying to have memorable activities, things that we're doing that are fun. She has said things throughout the years, like when I first got diagnosed metastatic, and we really weren't getting a handle on it from a med standpoint. And so we had the surgery and radiation and med change, and then new spots popped up. And my cancer really likes my bones, which I told somebody one day, I was like, if I'm going to be metastatic, that's fine because they can replace bones. But once it starts to get into internal organs, then we got issues. I can be bionic, that's fine. But the internal organs are a bit of an issue. So I'm good with where we're at. I'm also at a really good place. So I don't have to worry about it right now. But that's the crazy thing too, because once a month I go in and I'm having my labs drawn and I'm checking tumor markers, and there's still kind of this kick. Is this going to be the month that the chemo stops working? And so I should be happy and I should be thankful. And it's not that I'm not, because I am. I'm so thankful to have spent the last few months with my tumor markers going down and have been feeling really good. And I feel I've been able to do more things and be more active. But then there's also my appointments coming up on Friday, and so it's kind of the kick, is this month be it? Is so, yeah, she's been on the ride for as long as she has, that she gets it, because we haven't had, since kind of the attitude change is shifting with her, we haven't had any negative news. So I don't know how she'll react now. At one point she told me, it was probably my third new spot, and I said, "Babe, how are you feeling about we've got a new spot?" And she goes, "Mom, at this point I just kind of think about it as you've got a cold, and every time you get a new spot you kick it, so I'm not worried." And I was, "Oh, okay, all right, so maybe I'm not completely screwing up this parenting gig."
I mean, you've touched on the fact that you had a husband and he is now your ex-husband. Is he co-parenting with you?
I think that's the term we use. Yeah, we do. She spends half of her week with him and half of them leave with me, but she's also with me during the day, all day. When he goes to work, I mean, there's absolutely no need in him paying for childcare or when I'm available. And so when he goes to work, he brings her to my house Monday through Wednesday and then picks her up. I mean, there are issues sometimes, but I think that that's the normal. If there weren't, then we'd be doing something wrong. I think in my mind, I tend to have expectations of things being this picture perfect. Yeah, it didn't work out. We're not still married, but this is what I'd like it to be. And it's not that. And that's fine, too. We're learning. And I think that that's a part of the process. And we do really well. If I want to take her on a trip, I usually just say, hey, in a couple of months, I have to go X, Y, and Z, whatever it is. And he's just, okay, that sounds good. Sounds like you guys will have a good time. And he's usually pretty supportive. I've just mentioned recently that my tumor markers have been doing really well, and he says that he's glad. And that's, I mean, we just try to keep it as civil as possible, because at the end of the day, it's about her. And so that's just the way that it needs. She needs to see that even though we're not together anymore, that we still love her. And that's the thing. Well, she'll say, every now and then she'll say, well, just because you hate my dad, I don't hate him. I will always love him, because if it hadn't been for him, I wouldn't have you. It just wasn't going to be healthy for any of us to remain together. I think it was better for us to say, hey, this isn't going to be mentally, physically, emotionally healthy for not one of the three of us in this house. And both of us having grown up in, at times, very volatile situations. Were they always that? No. But there were moments where even our child has experienced both sets of her grandparents having these moments. And we're human. We're going to have moments. But I didn't want her growing up in a house where those moments became the regular reality. And that was, what I said. We're not doing this. Where I'm not going to spend a year of my life fighting for my life and then spend the rest of my life fighting with you. I'm not going to do it. And I think it wasn't easy, but I also think that it was for the best for all of us. I mean, I genuinely think both of us are the healthiest we've ever been on many levels. He is physically the healthiest I've ever seen him. He's been really taking care of himself, and he's been at the same job for 5 years and loves what he's doing, and just seems to be in a really good place. And that's what I tell Aiden. I just want your dad to be happy. I want him to be in a good place.
How do you, because I guess metastatic cancer means there will be an end. We still have to do day-to-day life, but you're raising a daughter who sounds amazing. How do you sort of prepare for that? I mean, do you have close family around you that support you through what's going on? Or how do you navigate this?
We have I call them our family. We have an amazing, amazing family. We have our bio family as well as our chosen family that support us, I mean, literally day to day. I said, I have 4 siblings. We talk regularly. One in particular, I would say I'm especially close to, and he checks on me. He mows my grass, those kind of daily things. He's really good helping me with, and I really appreciate the yard would not get mowed, just to be completely honest. My parents are close. My former in-laws are close, and my former mother-in-law calls me at least once a week. I adore her. And I mean, as a new wed, it was a little rough because she didn't mother the way my mother did. And so it was very weird for me. Why do you want to be around all the time? My mother never wants us around. I don't understand this dynamic. Go away. When you enter those dynamics and they're different, it's kind of, I don't understand. And now as a 38-year-old, I get it a little more, but as a 27-year-old, I was, I'm going to need you to back up. I'm done. But no, she's fantastic and she's so supportive. And the brother that I'm speaking of, we grew up in a very, I guess religious is the right word. We went to church every Sunday and my faith is very important to me, but I hadn't been to church in several years. And I was probably five months into separation. And this was February, March of 2019. So I was in pain, but still didn't know anything. And he texts me one day, or we were talking, and he goes, "Where are you at with God? I mean, he and I are still friends. We're good. I just don't go to church." And he was, "Okay. I mean, but I know that you go to one that you really enjoy and you are whatever. So if you invited me, I wouldn't be opposed to attending. I'm just not going. I just haven't, that's not one of the things that I've made a priority." And Saturday he texts me and says, "We're going to pick you up for church tomorrow." Okay, friend. You knew that I would feel obligated to go. I'm going to punch you out on the way to church, but okay. I walked in the door and I knew I was home. I was right where I was supposed to be. And that began a relationship building with some folks that I grew up going to church with. And so now we were all grown up and had children and kind of were doing our own thing now. And so it was really cool to experience kind of the other side of the coin. Now we're the adults with the kids and in the church. And then there were also new families that I didn't know and new people that I built relationships with. And even the pastor and his wife became, my daughter calls them aunt and uncle now, and their kids call me Auntie Randy, and they're family. And so these are people that when I got the official diagnosis of metastatic breast cancer, they showed up. One of my belief systems ingrained in me is that Jesus gave us an example of how to love people. And it not just that he went to the cross and hung on a tree, but he healed them. He provided for them. He took the bread and he divided it so everyone could eat. And to me, those were examples of caring for people. That's what we're supposed to do. And so I experienced people being the hands and feet of Jesus and in a way that I kept going, "Guys, what are you doing? I stop feeding me, stop taking out my trash." And it was one of those things where I had someone tell me when I was initially diagnosed, he said, "Wife and I are going to make you some freezer meals. You guys don't have to do that. It's totally fine." And he goes, "Don't tell me that I don't have to do that. You're not taking my blessing away from me." And I was, "Wait, what?" I had never thought about it that way. When somebody offers to do something for you, just let them do it, because they want to bless you. They want, their blessing you blesses them. I'd never thought about it like that. And so now I don't care what somebody offers. Yep, you can do it. Mm-hmm. You want to pay for what? You want to clean what? Yes, do it. And it's not because I'm looking for a handout, but if you're offering, it's because you want to do it. It's because you're trying to care for me. You're trying to love me. I have people who know me know that there are limited things that I can do, because I have only so much stamina for the day. I only have so much energy. I only have the neuropathy in my hands and feet. I don't do dishes because there are times when taking a shower. In fact, I try not to let my daughter take a shower before me, because she takes a shower and it's so hot that even getting in after her, it stays so hot. Burns me. I don't know what the deal is. It's probably something wrong with that. I don't know if it's a hot water heater. I don't know what it is, but I can't get it cool enough to not stay hot that it doesn't feel I'm being pierced. And so again, siblings pick on me about not washing dishes. Dude, I can't. No. I mean, y'all can come wash dishes anytime you want. I'm sorry they're piled up on the counter and you don't get it. if I wash dishes, then I'm done for the day. I can't do anything else because it hurts me that bad. And there was a point when I didn't even to say that, but now it's just that this is a reality. This is how it is. I say that to say I have people that I'll make offers and they're, oh, you don't have to do anything for me. And I say, and I have said to them, I understand that I don't have to do anything for you, but just know the thing that I offer is something that I can do. And I genuinely want to help. Again, it goes back to don't take away, because there are so few things that I can do, don't take away my opportunity to have a blessing or whatever. Don't take that away from me. Again, having that support system and having, we do have it. And that's how I get through that in my faith. And just for me, it's just knowing that I don't think that, I never know how to word this, because I feel like I word it differently every time I say it. I do not believe that God gave me cancer. I do, however, believe that he can use it. And so what exactly that means, I don't know. I do know that I also believe, kind of, I guess, the other way that I think about that is, I think that we experience things so that we can walk with someone else who experiences things. So my heart is, I literally would love to just have a peer support group of women who are artisans, or like specifically, I think my art, I don't want to say, well, I think it did. I think it suffered because it got put on the back burner because of cancer. Yeah. When I think what it could have done for me, even going through active treatment, because the few times that I did intentionally do something with my art while I was going through treatment, it relaxed me. It was those moments that I felt I was doing the right thing. That's kind of my heart, is when you think about business planning or whatever, and they tell you to niche it down, you've got to think about your target market. Artisan women who have been diagnosed with a chronic illness or specifically breast cancer, I would love to just be in the room with you and be there for you. That is what my heart's desire. I feel that would be a good way to use all of the yuck and the crap from the last few years, is to say, hey, don't stop art. Don't stop using your art. Even if you just use it for yourself, don't stop. Don't give up on your dreams. In theory, this is just a season, and it's a bad one, and it's a hard one, but we can walk through this together. And I think that's what having a good support system does. It encourages you to pursue your dreams. I think that's important, is to have someone who's been there too. I realize the importance of that now. I didn't before. Before I was no support groups, no anti-support group girl. I think I probably still am in the traditional sense of support groups. My mom went with me to all of my treatments. And you could either be in the group room where it was you and three other people, or you could be in semi-private cubbies, or you could be in the private rooms. Well, every time except for one, we were in one of the semi-private cubbies. And she's, why do you always come into one of those? Why don't you ever go out there in the group room? And I said, Mom, have you ever seen the people that sit out there? Have you ever looked at them? And she goes, no. They're just going through the motion. I go, they're not fighting. They're just taking the treatment because they were told to. I said, and that rubs off. And she was, okay. I said, I have some fighting to do. I don't need anybody to rub off on me negatively. And that's been my philosophy the whole time. I can remember actively thinking, I have a 6-year-old who needs to see me fight this. Bad things happen. Yes. And we're going to get through them together. And that was how I reminded myself to fight. And so, and there are still days that I have to remind myself, oh, yeah, you've been doing this for 5 years, but you're just going to give up now? Yes, I better not. I call my doctors my team of Avengers. They have my back. It's when I needed them, they assembled. And they have done, I feel, my medical oncologist in particular, she, and not that the others wouldn't if I needed them again, but she has not left my side. And I feel she fights just as hard for me as I do for myself.
I think you've made a really good point there, that it is so important who you surround yourself with. Like, I lost quite a few friends throughout my cancer process. And some of them, I didn't say it out loud, but in my head, I'm thinking, you're either with me or you're not. I don't have the time or energy to put up with bullshit anymore. So you can either walk with me on this or you're not going to. And I think this is one of the mm-hmm. things you were talking about before, when people say, oh, I don't know how you do it. And you sort of think, you have to. You have to keep putting one foot in front of the other. And it doesn't mean that you don't have really shit days mm-hmm. and that you don't cry and get angry and feel really pissed off that this has happened. It just sometimes you think, okay, well, I can either choose to wallow and let this suck me under, or I can keep moving forward. I don't know about you, but that's kind of how I keep kind of trying to, I guess, attack it.
No, absolutely. I mean, I would totally agree. I had to get more sick to realize that I needed to rest and I needed to take care of myself. Because I got done with radiation, October 6th was my last day of radiation. And it was also my first day of a promotion at my job. I went from being the assistant to being the manager of my caseload. I had 13 families on my caseload. In our office, I had the largest area. I traveled anywhere from 45 minutes one way. I had one person that was an hour and 10 minutes one way from the office. And the office was 45 minutes in the opposite direction from my house. So just to get to work, I was commuting 90 minutes a day. And then from there, once a month, I was having to commute all over the state in order to make this job happen. And so I didn't take a day off during treatment. The only time I took off was to have surgery. And I was out of the office for a month, but I was only off of work for a week, maybe two. And then I worked from home for 2 weeks. Yeah, I only took, I'm probably certifiably insane. I should probably be locked up somewhere. I totally get the response to your face when I said that. And then radiation, I would literally leave work and go to radiation and then go back to work for 6 weeks. Again, these are things. That's just what you do. It wasn't a question. My last day of radiation was my first day of a promotion that, I mean, I'm very grateful for. It was an amazing experience. Financially, it was something I really appreciate. But at the same time, thinking back on it, I should have said no. I should have taken time to allow my body to heal. I mean, I had just been through a heck of a year. And hindsight's 2020. It took the promotion. And on top of the promotion, I also said, I'm going to go to every craft show with the jewelry business and with Daughter's Soap, and this is what we're going to do. And I mean, we probably did. So we had end of October, November, and December right before Christmas. So we probably did probably 12 events in those 3 months. So that was every weekend to Christmas on top of working 40 hours a week. So, I mean, it was a lot looking back on it, but it is what it is. And I think that's just one of the things that we don't realize the things that we're capable of doing until we do them. If you surround yourself with people who are woe is me or take a day. I have a rest day. I have a day where I'm not as busy. I don't have as many things on the schedule, or I only have one thing, and the rest of the day is resting. And part of that is because I know my body is going to make me rest if I don't do it on purpose. I give myself scheduled rest days every week.
As you've been talking, I've been thinking, and I was thinking about this recently, actually, because I have 3 years out of, or 2 years really out of active treatment, because I had Herceptin for a year. And I need a lot of rest, and I find too much socializing too much. The point I was going to make is that sometimes I wish it didn't take cancer for me to realize that I do not have to thrash myself. I do not have to constantly be achieving. I do not have to do all of the things that I used to do, because actually, when it comes down to it, when everything is stripped away from you, it is when you have a cancer diagnosis, what you're left with in that moment are relationships and yourself. I think it does really strip back to what is important. And I think you've made those points of it's living in that moment. It's enjoying that time with your daughter. It's connecting with your family and friends. It's finding the things that make your heart sing. And I know we can't do that every day and sort of live this. Bills still have to be paid. But the important things is that relational stuff.
I think there's this fight to balance, and I think you learn better what's worthy of your time and what's worthy of going into balance. I think that that's what my brother said to me one time. Well, I set him up, and I didn't mean to, but I said, what is one thing that I could do more of, and what is one thing I could do less of in the coming year? And he basically said that I spend too much time thinking about dying. I feel that's not true, but okay. And what I came to realize was he was kind of my person that I would kind of unload on. And so in my mind, I only ever thought about the things that worried me about dying. And honestly, they're like materialistic things. I don't have a slush fund for my daughter. I don't have a house to leave her. It's those types of things. It's not even that, those aren't that big a deal. They're just things I don't have. But what I realized is that cancer doesn't make me think about dying more. It's made me very aware of my immortality. We're all supposed to be. If we take it back, again, based on my faith, if I take it back biblically, we're all supposed to live as though we could die at any moment. And we never do. Because we get into this rat race of I have to do this, I have to achieve that, I have to whatever it is. And so, sadly, a lot of times it takes something catastrophic. It takes something, a cancer diagnosis, someone passing away tragically, whatever the thing is, there's always a thing that has to happen tragically to kind of give us that reality. And so I think more so than I think about dying all the time, it's that I'm just very aware of living and enjoying my life. And so that's what's become really
absolutely
important.
I was thinking it goes right back to what we were saying before, is that you connect with people in such a different way when you've had this experience. And I just love that you've shared that with us, that you're being able to share your experience. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for joining me. I'm doing a listener survey to find out what you love and what you think I could do better. Let me know if there are any topics you want me to cover, or nominate someone as a guest, or any ideas that you have. The link is in the show notes, or head over to Facebook and there's a link to the survey there. The Seabridge Radio is every Sunday at 11:55 a.m. on Auckland's 104.6 Planet FM and anytime at planetaudio.org.nz/theseaword. See you next time.